With John Lewis closing Waitrose stores, including two in London, truly nothing is sacred in physical retail. But for a struggling town centre, problems run far deeper than shuttering shops. I'm Damien Wilde, editor of EG. Welcome to this latest EG Property Podcast. 2018 has seen hundreds of stores close, with millions of square feet of space set to lie vacant. It's captured some of the best-known names around. To House of Fraser, you can add Carpet Right, New Look, Prezzo and Jamie's Italian. But it's not just a 2018 phenomenon. In parts of the retail world, it's been a decade of disaster. One man has been watching developments more closely than most. Bill Grimsey, the former Wickes and Iceland CEO, led a review 5 years ago, making a number of recommendations to stem the tide. Today, he releases a second review. He joins me in the EG studio alongside Jackie Sadek, another member of the review team, and James Child, EG's retail analyst who contributed data to the review. So, Bill, a second review. Why now?
Well, 5 years on, I was invited to you and yours on BBC4 and to look at what's happened, what's changed. And I came off and I thought, you know what, this will be a good idea if we actually redid the review. And this was in December of last year. So little did I know that getting on the phone and trying to corral all the old authors together and put the team together, that we would face 2018 and what it's turned out to be. I mean, it was just incredible. But the 6 months since our first meeting, where we put the terms of reference together, and don't forget, these people do it for free, and they're all experts in their own field, and it's sometimes a bit like herding cats, but they are all experts in their own right, but they all have day jobs. So I'm the only one that doesn't, because I'm retired and I do this for fun. So it's been a heck of a journey this last 6 months, but we've got there and we're launching today.
So you weren't expecting this when you sat down to do the review. So from, you know, at that point, you were expecting something that was a little bit more gentle, perhaps, something less urgent.
Well, I think it's fair to say that when we did the first review, we did predict major structural changes in the retail structure industry. But I guess you get to a tipping point. It's that tipping point happened to have arrived in January, and it's tipped over, and we are seeing a cascade now of casualties, which will continue. And it's not a high street town centre issue. It's to do with, mainly to do with, the change in consumer habits, online shopping. I mean, we have a propensity in the UK to shop online, which is now higher than anywhere else in the world. We've just overtaken the States. About 17 or 18% goes through in the internet at the moment, and it probably will go to 30% by 2030, something like that. But that's just the tip of the iceberg, because the shopping journey today is totally different. It's no longer linear. Years ago, you have an idea, you go to a high street, you see the shops, you cruise around, you try on things, you do things, you see things, you buy, you leave. Today, you do a multitudinal activities to actually research it. You can surf the net. You can become a professional buyer. And so the whole thing is far more complex. And actually, bricks and mortar just plays a part in that journey now. And the one that's going to do well in that journey is the out-of-town shopping park, because they're convenient and you get free parking, and that's still going to work in the immediate future and be part of the internet journey. So that leaves town centres cut adrift, and the whole thing, the penny dropped about 4 or 5 weeks ago, sort of that eureka moment. You have to stop competing with out-of-town shopping centres if you're a town centre, because you can't. You can't provide the convenience and you can't provide the brands all in one place. So let them have it, but don't let them have anything else. Don't let them become a place to go for entertainment. Don't let them become a place to go and enjoy a day out. Make that the town centre. Turn it into a community hub that is based on health, education, leisure, entertainment, arts, crafts. And then you'll get foot traffic and you'll get some shops as well. So it's been 6 months of hard work, lots of fun. And when you work with some really bright people, that can be quite challenging and good fun too. So, yeah, we've arrived.
OK, we'll come back to the recommendations in a second. But you're saying at a headline level, three markets, out of town, town centre and online.
Yeah, I think let's just isolate the shopping mall at the moment, you know, the Westfields and those kind of things, which are, you know, few and far between, and they do very well, Trafford Centre and so forth. But the out-of-town shopping park is actually doing okay right now. The good ones. I mean, the B-grade ones have had it anyway, and we all know that. And we knew that back in the last review. Because people can get there in their cars and it's convenient. And online is going to grow and grow and grow. Once the older population also click onto it, which we're a bit slow to do, but we're getting there, it's going to be even stronger. So yes, I think those three definitions are quite straightforward. So, you know, town centres have to have a different reason for you to go there other than shopping.
Okay, thank you. And James, 2018, you know, you've been busy.
I have, yes.
So just paint a quick picture of how impactful 2018 has been for retail.
Well, I think, you know, Bill's obviously hit the nail on the head where, you know, moving from 2017, there were those waves of discontent in the market. But then all of a sudden, the new year kind of turned and here we are. So we've seen, as you've already pointed out, loads of types of different retailer who seem to have been able to, well, not compete with brands in their own sectors. And there's been various brands as well in the market who have also had to deal with other things like overexpansion in the past. I mean, if you think about the value sector, which is under some, you know, some extreme strain at the moment, you know, expecting Poundland to announce closures perhaps this week, officially or formally. So there's been various different battles, if you like, in the retail sector. We know that almost 11 million square foot of space is already closing this year, which surpasses BHS in 2016, but also Woolies back in 2008. And I think that you know, the general public have really woken up to this over the past 4 months, especially with the headline of House of Fraser as well. Department stores are another sector which are, you know, really under strain. You know, Debenhams looking at closing stores as well. So it's been very turbulent, and it's not one particular, as I said, retail sector or area. It seems to be the whole of the market as a whole battling against those other headwinds. As Bill's mentioned, online has increased massively over the past 10 years. It's moved up from around 4% in 2008 up to, as Bill said, almost 19 last year. So there's lots going on, and it has been a very busy 6 months.
So it's capturing every subsector within retail. Is it national as well?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at a national breakdown, around 30% of the store closures have been in London and the South East, which of course is a bit of a microcosm in itself, due to population numbers and the actual amount of shops that there actually are. But the North East and Yorkshire, both around 10% of the total store closures in isolation. So there are some regional differences, but It goes beyond the regions at the moment, and it's actually retail itself which is in trouble, I'd say.
Okay, thank you. And Jackie, this wider impact on towns and that the impact of out-of-town shopping centres, we've been talking about that for a long time. But there's major structural change here, isn't there? And the impact on those town centres and those high streets, it's not... Retail solutions are only part of a range of solutions that have to be found.
Well, I would go further than that. I would say a retail solution is not a solution, actually, for your town centres. I mean, this is a debate that I've been around now for 30 years. God help me. We missed the boat when out of town first happened. We didn't respond then in terms of protecting our town centres. We missed the boat again with the advent of online. We've now got a third time where there's been this massive structural shift for all the things that Bill and James have just explained. I mean, retail sector's just not going to recover from what's happened in the last 6 months. And if we miss the boat again, then we could end up with ghost towns. Now, one of the things that we're learning, and we said this actually in the first review, is that there are, from the point of view of managing a town centre, there's two things you must have. Number one, you need a plan, and it's got to be coherent, and it's got to be predicated on a business-led solution. And number two, you need a civic leader or a business leader who is going to enact that plan, who's going to thump the table and shout the odds to get that town centre sorted out. And so what we're saying in the review this time around is even further than what we said in 2013. We've got far too many shops. Any solution for a town centre that's predicated on retail is going to fail. Any solution for a town centre that's predicated on the past is going to fail. And then what you must do is move as much employment use as you possibly can into your town centre and residential. Now, obviously, all of that needs management, and it's got to be done sensitively, but the mixing of uses in town centres and all the things that Bill is talking about in terms of bringing in education uses, health service uses, I mean, all the stuff that local authorities can pump into town centres in order to increase footfall is part of the solution. It's not going to be easy.
Okay, thank you. Bill, Jackie there has, you know, captured some of those solutions, but you're saying there are 25 recommendations. What are the most meaningful, the ones that can yield immediate impact?
Well, Jackie's just mentioned some of the most important ones. The first is to have a coherent plan that is a business plan. And I'm not talking about spatial plans and, you know, master plans, which all relate to property and planning. And it's quite ironic that these plans exist, but they don't connect to any overall mission or vision. They're just brought about by planners who are pinging around out there with a bit of space and doing stuff. And that has to stop. So you need a coordinated plan. You need this leadership ingredient. But the biggest single barrier to this progress is our political landscape. It prevents people getting things done. You have layers of government from parish, district, county, and then Westminster. And each own a different parts of public realm, and each have different authority levels to do stuff. And it's just basically a blockage. So we need to get that localism back into an area and give the population and people the opportunity to vote for the right kind of leadership that has got the mandate to get things done that will create a town which is unique, special, attracts people to live, work and play and even visit based on activity and events and an interest. And when you do that, you'll have foot traffic and then you'll get some shops in the town. But this time, don't let those shops be national brands. I mean, it's just not gonna work. I'm a retailer of 45 years, active retail service, if you like, and if I look back at my career in the last century, we successfully cloned every town in this country and made them all look the same, and look what that did. It led to failure. So we really have to give the opportunity to incubate great innovation in our high streets, and the local authorities can be instrumental in doing that as well. So we've got, I'm just sort of mentioned several recommendations that need to be ploughed through. So we need to give powers to change of use. We need to give powers to local authorities to carve through empty units, find out who owns them. Compulsory purchasing is not easy, it takes time. So we need to actually give the powers in there so the local authority can have the relationship with the landlord that says, look, you know, you've got to do something with this property that's in line with this big plan, otherwise here's a stick. But here's a carrot as well to bring you on board. So it's a two-way street. But, you know, they've got to have these sticks out there as well. So it's unacceptable that in Stockton-on-Tees, which is fighting a fantastic battle led by a great CEO, it's unacceptable that Marks and Spencer wake up one day and say, this store that we've been here for decade after decade is going to close and leave an enormous crater.
When you say unacceptable, though, what do you do about that? That's a business decision.
Well, you know, I think we're going to get into the realms of philosophy now where, you know, if you go and drill for oil, and once you've finished, you have to cap it. You have to put the environment back to where it was. Now, shareholders have enjoyed years and years and years in Stockton-on-Tees, and suddenly they can just say, that's it, and we'll leave you with an empty space and walk away. So, you know, there's a debate to be had. I'm not going to go down the avenue of what you might do about that, but, you know, it's just not right that you can just 1 minute wake up and just up and leave. We need to have dialogue. We need to work together so that they can achieve their objectives. But at the same time, that departure is managed in a more successful way than just an empty unit. In St Albans, which is a very affluent town on the edge of AM25, the BHS is still empty. It's an enormous unit. It's 2 years. I mean, it's just unacceptable. Why aren't the people are clambering down the street saying, who owns this thing? Let's take them to task and make sure it gets put right. So I think we've got to give the power locally, and a lot of the recommendations in here are aimed at giving powers to local people, to local governments, to make decisions, have plans, and to get things done. So another example would be if the local authority planning say we don't want that new application to go through, which is an out-of-town shopping park, yet another one, and they turn it down, well, at the moment you can then appeal to a national inspector who then overturns it and doesn't even live there. So that kind of stuff is got to be talked about, and we've got to stop it because we want our towns to be places for local people to enjoy in the future.
Okay, some of it sounds very challenging, I have to say. Changing business behaviour, changing politicians' behaviour. But you have seen towns where this has worked, in Belgium.
Yeah, when we did the first review, we weren't very successful in getting the politicians here to get behind us. We tried very, very hard. But I got a call a year afterwards saying, would I go to this town to give a talk because we're going to do it? I said, you're going to do what? They said, we're going to use your review as a blueprint to produce our own plan. So I went across, and a guy called Chris de Klerk, who is the mayor there, is a single-minded, very talented leader, and he produced a 7-point plan, and he made it very public. I spoke at that public meeting. 500 people turned up, and he made all the councillors come down and sign the plan. So it was a very visible commitment. And here we are, 4 or 5 years on, and the spatial plan that fits the business plan is now coming into play, and it's got mobility angles to it, lots of more green spaces. It's dealt with the parking issue. There are no brands in the town, but there are on the outskirts in the shopping centre. There's unique shops in the town. There's great spaces to be worked. And right at the heart of the whole thing is a library, which is a tech centre, which is also has a great cafeteria, and all of the public kind of stuff takes place there. He's starting to buck the trend in Northwest Flanders, and it's working. So it can be done. And so when we did this review, we looked around to see what had happened here, and there's lots of great examples, I have to say, and yet they're in the review at the back when you get it later on. And we found Stockton-on-Tees, and they really do it well, and the chief executive's mission is to turn Stockton-on-Tees into the greatest open-air amphitheatre in the northeast of England. He has an events team with 11 people in it. He runs 92 events a year. That's two a week, and they range from huge activities to different types of markets in the square in during the week, and it's working. And he has he's compulsory purchased an arcade, and it's called the Fountain Arcade. It turns it into an incubator business for businesses, and they don't have to risk their livelihoods. And you've got lots of young entrepreneurs coming up. In fact, the cover of Grimsby Review 2, the illustration on it, is from a business inside that arcade. I was there, and I said to her, I've got a challenge for you. produce the cover. So she did, and that's why we've used it, because I think it's all about getting local economies to work again. It's about the economics of the area, and that cannot be predicated, as Jackie said, on the back of retail, because it has no future.
Okay, thank you. So muesli and granola for some towns, bacon and eggs for others, it sounds like.
Yeah.
Jackie, in government, is there an appetite for this? Is there a real appetite to put some of these recommendations into practice?
Well, as you know, Bill launches his review with Andy Street, the Mayor of the West Midlands, who is looking to pilot Bill's findings this time around in one of the towns in the West Midlands. And I have to say, and Bill can talk for himself on this, I think Bill and the High Streets Minister, Jake Berry, seem to have got onto a real wavelength. We've had enormous traction, felt incredibly good feedback from civil servants, an enormous will, really, to rally behind the cause this time around, and an understanding, really, far greater, I think, understanding that this is now a real priority. The British people are very emotionally attached to their town centres. I mean, it is a very, very physical manifestation of, you know, of what is good in their world. And you know, their local economies are dependent upon these places. There is only one local authority in the country that doesn't have any town centres, and that's South Cambridgeshire, and they aspire to having a town centre. So you've got this rather odd disconnect at the moment when town centres are failing, where you've got a local authority who hasn't got any, who is desperate to have one. So, you know, we have to sort this, really. And one of the reasons we chose the Local Government Association conference at which to launch this is because we think there was a massive role for local government here, front and centre, in the leadership of all of this. Members of the review team did stop short at allowing Bill to go for a wholesale reorganisation of local government. We did point out that had done for Michael Heseltine in the 1980s, and that actually he shouldn't go there. But obviously, stripping
review three.
Well, indeed, stripping away the layers of government is actually incredibly important. And whoever is the tub thumper for any particular town centre, that person has got to have the support of all the local stakeholders and has got to have a consensus behind them. And we don't actually care who leads on any of this stuff, provided somebody does and they've got full support. But if we all end up like squabbling like rats in a sack over who owns which bit, where and how, and all argue about the objectives, and we'll get nowhere. And that's the lesson you can take out of Stockton, and it's the lesson you can take out of Rousselaire. You have one plan, that's the Belgian town. You have one plan, you stick to it, you enact it, and you have one person with whom the buck stops. That's incredibly important.
Yeah.
Okay, and James, 11 million square feet and counting, you'll continue tracking?
Absolutely. Absolutely, can't stop now.
Okay.
No, I mean, as I said a bit earlier, we do expect that number to rise. I mean, I have no idea how far it's going to go, but there are others, as I said, Pound World, the original factory shop look like they're shutting stores as well. You know, we could see Debenhams close a few, if not perhaps more. So it's going to rise and rise and rise this year.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone's naive enough to think that it's going to slow down at all. But lots more work to do this year.
One of the things we haven't spoken about is how much retail space is in the planning pipeline, and that is a real anxiety, I think. I mean, it's several million, I think it's something like 27 million square feet of space that's in the retail that isn't yet built but has got planning permission. Now, obviously, that's a very wrong-footed strategy to move forward with most of that. You probably need 1 million of that, if tops.
Yeah, I think it's 27 million square foot by the end of 2022, maybe, which is ludicrous, to be honest. It's far too much in the wrong area at the wrong time, when there should be a real refocus on, you know, regeneration of areas that actually need not just retail space, obviously, but that reconfiguration and that emphasis on actual, you know, good change, and not just line in developers' pockets.
And Bill, a positive outcome is possible here.
It is. We need government to address some pretty tough issues here. It would be remiss of us not to mention business rates during a conversation like this. and business rates has grown into a massive income to the government, £29 billion a year, of which retail contributes about £8 billion. And in the retail part of business rates, it's broken. It doesn't work. It needs a rethink. So we see that as a barrier to entry. In the review, it calls for an alternative to be found. Personally, I would go further and I would say that, you know, it needs to be completely stopped tomorrow and replaced by possibly a sales tax. I mean, there's $400 billion of sales in retail. That's a 2% sales tax to pay for that straight away.
Online too, online only retailers too?
To all retail. I mean, so that takes care of that issue, which is out there bubbling away. You know, they're in industrial estates and they're getting, you know, an unfair advantage, which I actually got little sympathy for retailers in that. But the fact is that if you did it like that, you'd actually replace a whole lot of stuff. I mean, there's a whole industry around business rates out there. There's experts, there's consultants, there's appealment judges and lawyers, and, you know, it's just a waste of time. So it does need a complete radical rethink. That's not in the review. That's a personal view. I can see Jackie smiling at me, and I'll get a whack round the right ear in a minute. But the point is that these are barriers to progress. In the review, there's a whole load of other good stuff, like a centralised portal that government could get together, where we gather all good practice, best practice and plans, so that people can actually log in and find out what's working elsewhere and, you know, and share stuff. I mean, it's not rocket science, it's all in there. So if as Jackie has already said, Jake Berry has shown a complete willingness to get behind the kind of stuff we've got in here, not all of it, but most of it, then I think we will make some progress this time, and I'm very, very optimistic about that.
OK, well, we'll have to get the three of you with the minister back into the EG studio soon. Thank you, Bill. Thank you, Jackie. And thank you, James.
Thank you.
Thank you.